They say boys are made of hammers and nails and puppy dog tails. And girls, of course, are made of sugar and spice and everything nice. But we know that's really not so. Boys and girls are really made of corn. King corn.
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 565th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Monte Carlo who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with Dave Michaels on the boards. Hello, Dave.
Glad to be here.
Producer Carol Stafford Parmley Taff. Go ahead.
Hello.
And hey, what's this? A studio audience. Robbie Meyer, say hello.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Folks, while the heart has reasons that reason does not understand, the heartland has corn, 80 million acres of corn. This corn is the foundation of the modern food chain, giving city people living thousands of miles from the heartland cheap food and forcing heartland farmers to buy food manufactured thousands of miles away. Corn is in beef, pork, chicken, and fish. It's in soft drinks, cookies, and breakfast cereals. Corn is in the gas tanks of motor vehicles. Ian, welcome to the food chain.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Good. You're in, speaking of here, you're in Boston, right?
I am in Boston. I live in Boston.
Good. So, King Corn, it is a documentary. A couple of Boston area boys jump in a pickup truck and go back to the heartland, right?
That's right. A few years ago, my best friend from college, Curtis, and I decided to move to Iowa to see where our food came from by growing it ourselves, one little acre of corn. And we wanted to grow corn, to grow our 1 acre of corn the way an average Iowa farmer grows their 1,000-acre plot of corn. Do everything essentially the same way, and then see how that corn ended up in our food.
And it is in our food, isn't it?
It's in an incredible number of foods. Kurtz and I are actually this month trying to see what it would be like to not eat any food that contains corn or is derived from corn. And I must say, it is a real challenge. It's been a pretty hungry month.
So what are you eating? You have to eat...
Well, I'm eating a lot of...
spinach and stuff?
A lot of fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you can't eat anything that's been processed.
Can't eat anything really that's been processed. Can't also eat
most
meat products.
Yeah.
Because just about everything we raise for meat in the country these days eats corn.
What about farmed fish? Do they eat corn as well?
Even farmed fish eat corn. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been enjoying some wild fish, and I'm also gambling that most sheep don't eat corn, so I've been eating some lamb.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, it's been a process of entirely rethinking my diet for the month.
Right, because corn is in everything. You know, when you, and to illustrate that, you open up the documentary King Corn by going to a scientist at a university and having your hair sampled. And what was that about?
Steve Macko is a professor at the University of Virginia, and he had been testing hair samples from essentially anybody whose hair he could get his hands on, seeing a lot of his students.
And why hair?
Hair, because hair, as he says in the film, hair is kind of like a tape recorder of your diet. So what you eat essentially leaves a signature in your hair. And corn photosynthesizes carbon in such a way that it leaves a particular signature. Basically, it's the ratio of different carbon isotopes in corn would be different than other crops. Mm-hmm. And that carbon signature stays with the corn all the way through the entire food chain, all the way through the consumption of a hamburger. And then
if you feed a cow corn, that isotope hangs around inside the cow, and they can trace it all the way up the food chain to your hair.
Exactly. And so Steve Macko has been testing a lot of his students, and we were really no different, having ate a pretty typical college kid American diet of hamburgers and processed foods and late-night candy bars, beer and soda. He told us that based on our carbon signature, we were basically made out of corn. And that's true for most Americans he tested, especially because so many of our calories are from the corn plant,
mm-hmm.
way at the other end of the food chain.
But it all goes through the food chain, is processed, packaged in different forms, in candy bars and in sodas and soft drinks and fruit juices and breakfast cereals, and it's infused in just about everything. So did he tell you what percentage of you are, you're made of corn? I mean, we really are corn, aren't we?
We really are corn. I can't remember the percentage he gave us. But we did get interviewed by a Fox News reporter a couple weeks ago who sent in her hair to be tested, and I believe he said she was about 67% corn.
Wow.
So one of his students apparently was off the chart, and at first he thought he must have made some error, but then he talked to the student, and the student explained that he was eating 3 or 4 hamburgers a day. And so overwhelming majority of his calories were coming from corn through that beef.
So when we go out and buy a hamburger, we think we're eating hamburger, but we're really eating corn, right?
Yeah, essentially. And the same is true for chicken and pork, and as we mentioned before, fish, even milk, milk and eggs. The primary source for the carbon that's feeding these animals is corn and soybeans, which are the two main mm-hmm. crops grown in Iowa. So the hair test really opened our eyes to this sort of secret ingredient in all of our food. We began walking down grocery store aisles and seeing that four-letter word, corn, just pop up everywhere.
It's also called other things, isn't it? For example, it could be called high fructose syrup or something like that.
Yep, high fructose corn syrup. It can also be called maltodextrin. Corn is such a malleable that corn kernel is a packet of starch, and so it can be transformed into myriad products.
Mm-hmm.
We've been finding this month really long lists of food ingredients that can all be derived from corn, whether it's calcium carbonate in my soy milk or sorbitol in our toothpaste and chewing gum.
That's from corn?
Uh-huh. You can make a lot of things from corn that you can make out of petroleum, actually. So, you know, obviously, we all know about corn being made into ethanol, but it's also made into plastics and glues and cardboard, and pretty remarkable that we can make all of those things and all of these foods out of the same crop.
So when you walk down the aisles in a grocery store, and you see all of those packages, package of cookies, package of toothpaste, package of fruit juices, corn is in it all. And corn is in us to the extent that we're, 67% corn? Whoa! Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking corn, king corn, the nation's top crop. We have 80 million acres of it or so, and it's in just about everything from our head to our toes. We're almost, 67% corn. Two-thirds of us are corn. And today we're going to talk with the people who went back to the heartland to rediscover this crop and its impact on our lives, and invite you to ride along with us. Phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, how corny can it get out there, folks? I guess it can get pretty corny, to the extent that we, you and I, are almost two-thirds made of corn. That's where the carbon in our body comes from, is corn. Percolating up through the food chain, through processed foods, through the meats that we eat, it's corn is everywhere. And to the extent that it's almost impossible to get through the week without eating it in one form or another. As Ian is finding out, Ian Chaney, who's a co-producer of the documentary King Corn, now making the rounds. Ian, how difficult is it to survive a week without corn?
It's very difficult, especially if you grew up eating essentially a normal American diet, because most of the foods an American kid grows up eating, whether it's hamburgers and sodas or fruit roll-ups and granola bars, even a glass of milk, all those foods depend one way or another on the production of corn. So trying to remove corn from your diet makes you a pretty annoying restaurant customer.
Yeah, you would drive a restaurateur crazy, I would suspect. We have a quick question here that might get us along the way a little bit. Ben, welcome to the food chain. Your question?
Yes, I have a question for your expert. Part one is, out of the 80 million acres of corn, how much of that is genetically engineered? And is genetically engineered corn safe to eat since you change the carbon isotopes of which you speak? And I'll listen for your answer on the air.
Great question. Thank you very much. Do you see a lot of genetically engineered corn when you went back to the Midwest, Ian?
Yeah, genetically modified corn has, I think the percentage of corn that's genetically modified has been growing year after year. The year we planted our corn, I believe something like 45% of all the U.S. corn was genetically modified, and that number's continued to go up.
So somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 million acres of genetically modified corn out there. So it must be okay, otherwise we'd all be dead.
I guess that's the logic. There's certainly plenty of examples of our culture thinking something okay is okay because we don't see any immediate problems with it, but sometimes problems have a way of creeping up on us after a few decades. We planted genetically modified corn called Liberty, and our corn seeds had been genetically modified to resist a very powerful herbicide. Mm-hmm. The herbicide actually was called Liberty. The seeds were called Liberty Link corn seeds. So
you have a package, essentially, of genetically engineered corn that is able to withstand an herbicide and not die.
Exactly. It essentially allows you to use a more powerful herbicide that will, a broad spectrum herbicide, they call it, so that it'll kill a really big range of weeds. But your corn, because it's been given this genetic defense, can still grow.
And
if we'd planted some other type of corn on our cornfield and sprayed Liberty, that corn would have died.
So then the gene that is within this engineered variety of corn, is there any indication? It must be safe, right? I mean...
I would assume so. We didn't look into it too deeply, and we didn't try to isolate the gene and and eat a bowl of it or something.
So they tell us it's safe, right?
Yes. There's a ban on genetically modified corn in Europe. We can't sell our genetically modified corn to European markets because European consumers are traditionally much more wary of GM crops, which in the United States have just sort of crept into our food system.
Obviously a very big way.
Yeah, in a very big way.
Well, in order not to get sidetracked down what might be a very big highway of discussion, let's go back to you and your partners in the development of this documentary. You Boston boys, a couple Boston boys, decided to go back to your forebears' hometown of what was it, Green, Iowa.
My best friend from college and I realized that our great-grandfathers both came from this tiny county in northeastern
Iowa.
Oh,
really? Both of you had grandfathers in this little town?
Uh-huh. Our great-great-grandfathers grew up there. My great-grandfather grew up on a farm and later...
That must have been a wonderful epiphany. You know, two Boston boys hanging around a bar, drinking beer, watching the Red Sox, and... All of a sudden, you realize your grandparents came from the same little tiny town in Iowa?
It was very remarkable. And actually, Aaron Wolf, who's Kurt's cousin and who directed the film, I think really seized on this as a great way to help tell the story of how our agriculture has developed. So the process of learning about our acre of corn and how it came to be was also a process of learning about our family histories.
Right, right.
So in a sense... We felt personally invested in this corn we were growing because we were part of our families were part of the system that helped make it possible.
And in a very real sense, I guess you guys are representative of all of us because there was a time when all of our ancestors were involved in growing food, right?
Absolutely. I think certainly, you know, years and years ago, and even going back a few generations, the percentage of Americans involved in farming was much higher. And I think that was one of the reasons why we were so eager to move to Iowa, was that we felt that our generation has become so disconnected from the soil, essentially, that we felt there was something missing. And we wanted to try and go see what it was like to grow food and do something real. I mean, I guess we, in a sense, had to do something after we graduated from college and... this seemed like a
place to go. Well, yeah. you went back and you asked a farmer for an acre. Now, an acre farm in the Midwest is almost unheard of because they have become very, very large. The trend in agriculture, of course, like all business, has been very, very big or very, very small. And you find small farms serving cities, but out in the countryside, an acre farm is like, what did the people of Green, Iowa say when two of its wayward children came back to town and said they wanted to farm an acre of corn?
The people of Green were very nice. I think they probably thought we had lost our minds, but they were pretty tolerant of our little experiment. And I guess when it came down to it, given that we didn't know a thing about growing corn, starting with 1 acre was probably the best idea.
Uh-huh. And you kind of road along. You didn't use, you know, small acreage technologies. You used the same technologies that everybody else was using. So you kind of rode along on the farmer while he did everything, right?
Yeah, our 1 acre was nestled in a much larger cornfield, mm-hmm. and so it was planted and fertilized and sprayed in exactly the same way as the cornfield around it.
Were you able to keep track of costs and everything?
We were able to keep track of costs. I mean, the cost of making a film about 1 acre of corn quickly skyrocketed and made the entire, you know, farming is a hard business as it is, but filming, I think, might even be a worse business.
Uh-huh.
But we were able to learn that over the course of our year, we lost money growing and selling this acre of corn. And the only way we could make a profit, and profit in quotes, if you can call it a profit, was thanks to the government subsidy checks.
So you got a government subsidy check for growing an acre of corn?
For an acre of corn in our area...
You got to hold that, will you? We got to take a quick break.
Sure.
And when we come back, we'll find out how much the government subsidized the boys to grow 1 acre of corn in Iowa. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Ian Cheney, co-producer of King Corn. 800-624-2665 and 831-479-1080. Pick up your phone and join us and see where corn takes us. Right back. Well, sugar and spice and everything nice, and hammers and nails and puppy dog tails. But we know that boys and girls are really made of corn, king corn. To what extent are children made of corn, and are we made of corn? Well, according to the isotope records recorded in our hair, we are 67%, two-thirds. Of us are corn, of our bodies. Amazing, just truly amazing, the transformation of our food chain into one based almost entirely on corn. And Ian Cheney, who is with us today, co-producer of the documentary King Corn, Ian and his buddy went to his college chum, moved from Boston back to the Midwest, the little town of Green, Iowa, both of whom had grandparents who lived there, and experienced what it was like to grow 1 acre of corn. And before we left, he was going to tell us how much the government subsidized his 1 acre of corn. Ian, what did you have to do to get a government check for growing 1 acre of corn?
Well, you essentially fill out a lot of paperwork, but for the most part, it's just showing up and declaring your intention to grow yellow dent corn that gives you a direct payment from the government.
We should talk a little bit about yellow dent corn, because there are many kinds of corn, but in the Midwest, there is yellow dent corn, correct?
Sure. When Curtis and I first drove across the country, we marveled at these miles and miles of corn and thought, my gosh, are Americans eating that much sweet corn? And that much corn on the cob and miles of soybeans? Are we eating that much, you know, edamame and tofu? But most of the corn that's grown in the United States is yellow dent corn, which is not eaten off the cob, but has been bred to produce a lot of starch on these corn stalks.
Mm-hmm. And that typical Indian corn, you know, that came out of Central America, had a much higher protein content, correct?
Yeah, in trying to boost the productivity of the average corn field, we've given something up. What we've gained in starch, we've lost in protein, which is where most of the nutritional value of corn lies. Mm-hmm. So we've been breeding corn fields that are incredibly productive. You know, you can grow 10,000 pounds of corn on a single acre of land, but the nutritional value has gone way, way down.
Interesting. So now we have one kind, essentially, of the many, thousands of varieties of corn. We now have one kind, Yellow Dent, that's grown on 80 million acres throughout the Midwest. And take us back to the subsidy. I got to figure out what it takes to get a subsidy for growing an acre of corn.
As I said, a lot of paperwork, and the life of the modern farmer has changed from what I imagine my great-grandfather's life was like. These days, it's a lot of machine repair and a lot of paperwork trying to figure out how to best work the government subsidy program. On our 1 acre, in our town of Green, a farmer the year we planted our corn was guaranteed around $28 as a direct payment, which doesn't have anything to do with the contemporary price of corn on the market. It's just an incentive to grow corn based on how many bushels of corn that acre of corn produced in the past. So it's slightly complicated, but essentially when it comes down to it, you're just getting a direct payment check for declaring that you're going to grow corn. Then later in the year, depending on how the price of corn performs that year, you can also get what's called a counter-cyclical payment and a loan deficiency payment. And those are payments that are compensating you if the price of corn is lower than a target price set by Congress.
So with your government subsidy, were you able to make money growing your acre of corn?
You know, I think we were, but it was such a wash because of how much money we spent making the film that we can hardly consider ourselves successful farmers.
Okay, couldn't get any subsidies though for the filming, right?
Well, actually, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting provided some finishing funds for the film, so in the sense we did get a film subsidy as well.
Okay, good. And what did you learn about the evolution of culture in the heartland agriculture? Were you able to look back and kind of see how your grandparents grew up? And then is there a difference in the heartland? What did you see?
When our great-grandparents were growing up, families spent a lot more of their income on food and spent a lot more of their time trying to grow food. And I think that establishes a pretty core difference between their generation and mine. You know, when I graduated from college, we had an obesity epidemic afoot in the country.
Right.
Arguably a problem of having too much food, too cheaply. But in my great-grandparents'
or
day,
too much
farm,
cheap food.
What's that?
Too much cheap food.
Too much cheap food. Too much cheap, unhealthy food, as some have pointed out. But in my great-grandparents' day, the dream was to produce more on every Iowa acre.
Right, right.
And so everything that's happened in the last 50, 60, 70 years has been, on the farm, has been designed to produce more calories per acre. So the invention of the tractor and the adoption of nitrogen fertilizers, all the way through the adoption of pesticides and herbicides on the acre, and even genetically modified corn. All of these are ways of just producing more corn per acre.
More calories per acre.
More calories per acre.
Whoa. And what happened to the farm communities as a consequence of that drive to grow more?
Well, as we got more efficient at growing corn, we needed fewer and fewer people to do the work. The most obvious example of that is a tractor. A tractor replaces a whole team of farm boys and girls.
Yeah.
And so as tractors marched onto the countryside, people essentially marched off, and we transitioned from a countryside dotted with small farms where farm boys and girls had to help their neighbors and work the land, to a countryside where the average farm just kept getting bigger and bigger, and farmhouses kept getting abandoned.
So, and those little boys and girls?
And the boys and girls went to the city. And that's why I grew up in the city.
There you are. Hey, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking corn with Ian Chaney, who's co-producer of King Corn. Documentary now making the rounds. Great, fun movie to watch. Had the opportunity to see an edition of it, and it's well worth the moments. If you want to see what's in your body, you take a look at what's in that movie. It is called King Corn, and it's out. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how all that corn got into our bodies. Right back.
Hi, folks. How many of you out there love to garden? Wouldn't it be nice to grow some of your own food? Or maybe a flower garden would brighten your day. Well, now you can have the pleasures of gardening without all that effort. You don't need a tractor. You don't need a rototiller. All you need is the Knox Garden Box, a heavily constructed, portable, elevated garden on legs that can virtually change the way you've gardened in the past. The Knox Garden Box can be set up anywhere. Yes, you can place it right on concrete. For those with bad backs, you've got critters and gophers, no space or maybe no dirt. With the Knox Garden Box, the therapy of garden is now the prescription for good mental health. The way to find your fabulous Knox Garden Box is by logging on to KnoxGardenBox.com. That's K-N-O-X, GardenBox.com. Or by calling 831-461-9430.
80 million acres of corn. 2 trillion corn plants out there in the heartland of our nation. And we have become a nation of corn. People of the corn, you might call us, as we are, as evidenced by the isotopes registered in our hair, 2/3 corn. Wow. Ian Chaney, corn is used in almost everything, but to really get a good understanding of it, let's go through some of the uses really quickly. As a feedstock for animal production, how is it used?
Well, about half of the corn crop every year is processed into feed, and the majority of that feed is for cattle.
Mm-hmm.
So several different types of the corn will be fed to cattle in several different forms. One form is simply grinding up the entire corn plant, including the corn cob and the stalk and everything. Another is just kernels stripped off the cob. And another is something called distiller's grains, which is corn that's been run through an ethanol plant, and the byproduct is a high gluten feed that can be fed to cattle.
So cattle at one time used to be ruminants that lived on grass.
Exactly. Cattle evolved to eat grass, and so for years it made sense to feed them grass. In the last 30 or 40 years, corn has become so cheap and so abundant that the economic logic of feeding corn to cattle proved somewhat irresistible to feedlot operators. And the reason for that is that corn makes cows fat more quickly.
Because of all the high sugar content, right?
It's a high starch feed. Yeah, they sometimes call it a hot feed. And cattle, you know, much the way young people like eating candy bars, cows like eating corn because it's a high starch feed and it gives them energy quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so cows are now fed up to, you know, 2/3 of their rations on average about are corn. And so the amount of time it takes to produce a cow that's ready for slaughter has gone way down. The lives of cattle are shorter now because of corn.
Mm-hmm. And thus we have dollar hamburgers.
Exactly. And so now we're kind of hooked on a hamburger food chain that relies pretty heavily on this high starch, cheap feed.
Let's go to the use of corn as a sweetener, a high fructose corn syrup.
A smaller chunk of the corn crop every year, but still a sizable amount when you think about how many acres are planted in this country, goes to high fructose corn syrup. Essentially, high fructose corn syrup is made by breaking down the corn kernel into its constituent parts and using enzymes to rejigger those carbon molecules to make strands of fructose. And so in...
And incidentally, there's a wonderful scene in the documentary King Corn about you guys trying to make high fructose corn syrup in your kitchen.
Yeah, we weren't allowed into high fructose corn syrup factories to film, so we decided to try and replicate the process ourselves, and we had some success. It although we had to substitute our French press coffee filter for the industrial version of that, and mm-hmm. use a Cuisinart where they might use something
right.
a little more efficient, but.
So this high fructose corn syrup is used to sweeten what?
Sweeten just about everything. The supermarket today looks the way it does in large part thanks to high fructose corn syrup. You walk down a soda aisle and you see all those incredible colors of sodas. You walk down a cookie aisle. You walk down a any processed food aisle, and the sheer number of products goes up and up every year because we have this very cheap and easy to use sweetener. Corn syrup can be shipped by rail and unloaded by hose, and it's overtaken cane and beet sugar as the main sweetener mm-hmm. in the American food system.
So when people go to the fast food, do McDonald's, a Burger King, a Wendy's, one of those places, and they get a typical fast food meal, hamburger, french fries, soft drink, what they're really getting is King Corn, right?
Yeah. You know, if you tried to eat a McDonald's meal without eating anything that contained corn, you'd end up having a hamburger that didn't have a hamburger on it and didn't have a bun because the bun has corn syrup in it. You'd probably just have a piece of lettuce.
You'd have a lettuce and a pickle.
You couldn't have any ketchup because that has corn syrup.
You couldn't have french fries because
french fries, you'd have to have them without having them be fried because they're either fried in corn or soy.
And if you ever had a french fry that hasn't been fried, you wouldn't eat it again, right?
That's right.
So and essentially, it's corn.
Yeah.
It's corn that you're... What about, real quickly, going to corn as a biofuel?
Yeah, when we were growing our acre of corn, I remember standing on the edge of our field and imagining that corn being turned into fuel, and it wasn't hard to think that that was a little absurd, and here's why. The amount of fossil fuel we had to...
You're going to have to hold that for just a second. We're going to take one last break here, and sure. When we get back, we'll talk to about corn as ethanol. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, right back. Well, corn is king out there in the heartland of our country, and Ian Cheney, along with some associates, went out and chronicled the development of corn, the evolution of corn as the foundation of our food chain. And you can see it all in the documentary King Corn. Well worth a look, a great, and it's even entertaining, too. Entertaining because there's two young guys just fresh out of college to go back to the heartland and grow an acre of corn. And through that adventure, tell the story of corn and corn's place in our food chain. And now there's a new place for corn because it's now being used to fuel our motor vehicles. And is that having a big impact on the heartland as well, Ian?
It's hard to overstate the effect of ethanol on the heartland. The price of corn this year is about twice what it was just a few years ago when we grew our acre of corn. That's largely because the number of ethanol plants in the country in use and under construction has doubled. And so these ethanol plants are gobbling up a larger percentage of the corn crop. And farmers have responded to this higher price by essentially planting more corn. This year, I believe farmers planted over 100 million acres of corn.
Wow.
Whereas just a few years ago, it was something like 70 million acres. So they're shifting other crops, cropland into corn production, and shifting conservation land into corn production, buying new tractors, going into debt to increase the size of their fleets. And as a result, what we're seeing across the Corn Belt is a boom mentality.
Yeah, well, having just, you know, been through a couple booms, one is quick to ask, what happens if this bubble pops? What happens if, I don't know, corn blight comes through and all the corn disappears? What would happen to our food chain?
It's a very important question, because when you set up a system, a food system that is so heavily dependent on just a handful of crops, you're literally putting all your eggs in one basket. And
literally.
And so the risk there is that if we lose one of those crops, our source of calories goes away. And so I think
a caller calls in and makes mention of a blight from Al-Qaeda. You know, and one thinks about the Irish potato blight and the, you know, the trouble that Ireland found itself in when its sole, you know, staple food, the potato, suffered a blight. So, you know, it's just something that you scratch your head about and you think, well, it's made this wonderful possibility of a dollar hamburger for people who live thousands of miles away from food. But it also, you know, gives you pause to wonder as well, what could happen? Is it making us healthier?
Is a system based on corn making us healthier?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's not making us healthier. I think corn has enabled the creation of a food system that is awash in pretty unhealthy foods.
Well, Ian Cheney, co-producer of King Corn, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you out there for tuning in. Tune in next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on the Food Chain. And remember, cheap food isn't. Thank you, Ian. Appreciate it.
Been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.